Hey guys, and welcome to the Trinity Audio Podcast. And today we have a very special guest, our second guest, Sarah Levy.
Hi.
Co-founder and CEO of Uno AI, and of course, my co-host, Ron Jaworski, our CEO.
I want to be a co-guest. Can I be a co-guest?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You can be a recurring guest.
A recurring guest.
Yes.
Like a sidekick. I will be your sidekick.
Sidekick is perfect.
Oh right? My God. Mm. The format is just, you know, we're building it as we go. We didn't have like a name for the first, like, I think 5 episodes. So,
I'm not sure we're 100% sure with the new names that we've got right now. I think we should do another, like, you know.
Another round of names.
Yes, I think.
We don't have a name yet, probably.
I think we should discuss it again. Maybe Sarah has a good
idea. Do you have a good name for our podcast?
For the podcast? Wasn't it, like you said, audio something?
See? Doesn't catch up.
It doesn't catch.
I do something. Yeah.
Yeah. Audiofy the internet.
I think let's go, like, after the flow of the conversation. Let's see if Sarah has a name for it.
Okay.
I promise. I'll do my best.
Okay. So yeah, we didn't.
We should use AI though.
We tried
bad names.
You know, it's not creative.
Yeah, then. We tried with ChatGPT. Actually, we should have tried with Claude, but we tried with ChatGPT and it just gave the worst name.
Yes, I would say with Grok. Really, definitely. Like, I think Grok.
Grok. But Grok will give us like very explicit names, I feel. Grok will be like, fucking Trinity Audio.
Yeah.
Fuck.
The MFK podcast. Yeah.
So before we dive into Uno and to, you know, AI and everything, I want to start with a question that we ask. You know, you're the second guest. So it's not like
every guest.
So I would say, like, what's the most like off / dangerous / weird misconception that you get from people you work with about AI or with people that you encounter about AI?
Well, I guess people think it's magic and it's not like it can do anything. Like it's a magic wand. And okay, there is one thing. I'm raising funds now, and I'm meeting with VCs. Yeah,
raising funds.
And I'm meeting with VCs, like 20 VCs every week. Damn. And I will not talk about it in like a negative way because, you know, I need them and I need their support. But like the typical question. Okay, we get you. We love the team. We love you. We love the problem. The product is sleek. Everything looks really good. But how do you know that in 3 years, Opus will not release a model that just does what you're doing? And like,
I mean, everything can
everything.
Happen.
It's like, yeah. it right? It holds for anything.
Yeah,
like,
everything can happen.
Like a magic question.
Yeah,
sort of
like,
answer,
what do you want me to say? Maybe.
Like, yeah, it's like,
what's your theory about that? Like, what's your theory about that? Let's hear what you think.
Yeah, like, what do you know?
Yeah, do you know?
But the thing is what you just said about people think that it's magic and people think that I think every AI product, you always get that question. And the thing is, yes, I think there might be a chance, like, you know, a mediator can just, you know, fall out of the sky and destroy the studio.
That's a great metaphor nowadays.
Well, yeah. I mean, anything can happen. So how do you deal with a question like that? Because I feel like a lot of startups and tech companies are dealing with this question.
Everyone is dealing, like, since they released cloud security, which, like, you know, cyber security was like the stable where you make money, where all the VCs are happy. Suddenly the entire cyber security industry is shaking. So I think this was like a big thing. It just happened. And like the things change so fast. So you don't even know what to expect. What do you say? You know, we're an adaptive product. We're also like, yeah, also evolving. With everything, I have the best people in the world. I mean, they know what's going on in the AI space. We have AI embedded in our product. So it's gonna, I don't know. To be honest, there is no good question. There's no good answer to that. But
it's a tricky question.
Because
you really, really in uncertainty times right now.
Yes.
Nobody knows, you know.
And everything's very noisy.
Oh, my God.
Like, in what aspect?
Like thousands of companies that kind of do things with AI, and no one can tell the difference between like serious things that are just a wrapper for a model and something, you know, that has no real value. It's very hard. So it's lots of noise, and the noise makes everything, like, VCs don't want to take a position. because they want to see what happens. How is this?
Everybody wants to be like above.
Yeah, let's see how this noise evolve. Let's see what survives. So they don't want to take a position, but they're like venture capital. I mean, they're supposed to take a risk. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, if it was secure, right? If was no risk to take, then it wouldn't be like, anyway.
A VC.
As you see, I'm raising funds now. I have lot to say about the experience. No, but it's going well as well. So.
Wait.
Okay.
I think that it's risky time, and I think that the name venture capital, the venture part in venture capital, it's not really a venture. You know, they're really going on safe bets most of the time. They don't take risk, and now for them, the time right now, you know,
very
disruptive, and they don't know what to do. Completely understandable. But on the other hand, I think I agree with you 100%. Everybody thinks that AI is magic, and then you start working with AI, and you understand that, like human being,
it has its limitation. I mean, not just mistake. I mean, it's as good as the data you feed to it.
You're right.
That's it. That's the limitation.
So, speaking about data, for, you know, folks that don't know, you know, or don't really know what you guys are doing, so just like tell us a little bit about you know, and what's like the pain point, and because you talked about that your company, you know, AI is embedded within the product. So
yeah, I think AI is embedded within every product today. So it's not even something I would say. That's not what makes us an AI company. Everyone also codes with AI. Whoever doesn't code with AI, go code with AI. It doesn't make sense.
For sure.
Like, unless you want the competition to really like kill you. But with what we're doing, like, I know, you know, everyone knows that when AI works, it brings huge value today. And with enterprise companies, I mean, it used to be a buzz like 8 months ago, 12 months ago, we want to become AI first and so on. But recently, it's no longer a buzz. They really want, like, the top priorities for every enterprise I'm talking to is to become AI first. Enterprise companies like 5,000 people, 10,000 people and more. Okay.
That's, yeah.
And the value is no longer theoretical. Like, think about Glean. Glean is working. Glean is the agent that searches documents. It's working. And because it's working, it's getting like huge adoption. The company is exploding. Everyone, like, Glean is a great company, great agent and so on. And the places where AI works, though, are very limited. So
what do you mean by that?
So Glean works, Zendesk AI, like a customer success AI agent, Copilots, of course, anything that is like personal productivity, I'm putting that aside. I'm talking about AI, like replacing processes, replacing people, automation, accelerating everything. So wherever the context, and I'll explain why that is available for the agents, AI is working. And let's think about it. Like when you're searching documents.
You mean just when the context?
When the context
of
the search. You can think about it as a search problem. Like Glean is searching documents.
Your documents, your data.
Yeah, it works in the organization and it searches within, you know, all the documents of the organization. That's what Glean does. That's what it's trained to do. So for a document, what's the context? So the date was created, the owner, the permissions, even the intent of the document. You run an LLM, you have the intent of the document. So when you search something that was created in the past 3 months and talking about something like that, the context to tell the difference between like this document and this document is machine ready.
So basically, if, for instance, I have a document that was written 5 years ago when, I don't know, certain laws weren't established regarding that certain document. So the context means that, for instance, it's not valid anymore.
Yeah, and the agent just knows it, right? It knows that it's not valid because the creation date is attached to the document. It doesn't need to work hard to figure out when this document was created. That's what I mean by available context. Who is the owner? Like I'm searching for things and the owner is from another department or the owner left the company. And so the agent knows who's the owner. It doesn't need to go and work and dig in Okta or in a, you know, an access control system or to figure out who's the owner and now connect them. Like it's just there, like the owner of the document, the last revision and so on. That's context. Mm. Now, let's go to the core data of the enterprise, which is where Una operates. The big, like Snowflake, Databricks, Power BI, Tableau, the big data platforms where all the data of the organization is ingested and all the analytics work is done, machine learning and models and, you know, all the, this whole concept of the past decade of let's be data driven. Let's make decision based on data, right? Every company invests millions in data. So this is what I mean by enterprise data. You look at a table. This table is created by a code like SQL or Python. This code is managed in a repo with ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Not attached to this table. This table reads from a table that reads from another table that reads from another table. The entire sequence is managed elsewhere. The freshness of the data, the healthiness of the data controlled in another system. Now, this data is now queried by a tool like Tableau to build reports, to build dashboards. That's another system. The users of these dashboards and reports, I mean, 90% are not even used, but who is using them? Who is viewing them? Who is sending them? What? That's elsewhere. So the context is federated across so many systems. And when agents are looking, for example, for, hey, what's the churn of the past quarter? What's the customer churn? They will find like 50 tables with customers. They don't know what it is. They have no clue to tell the difference between the data in this table and the data in this table. What's the way to calculate churn? Is this data even like healthy? So they will just give you a lucky guess, which is what we all know AI will do. I mean, they will not tell you, I don't know.
Yes,
of course. Come up with something, right? And that's the problem of enterprise data. And that's what Uno is solving. So Uno is generating this context layer for agents to be able to act on enterprise data. And we auto-generate it. And that's the magic that we build.
In the process of the data being fed to the database, or you just scan the database and then add the contextual relevancy based on, I guess, there are tons of parameters.
So as I said before, like there's many, many, many systems where this context lives. So we integrate with all those systems. We integrate with over 30 systems in production now, and we collect all the metadata. Metadata is the flow of the data, the ownership of the data, the code, the glossaries when they exist, the usage of the data, who is using what and how often. And we collect all that metadata and we're able to stitch everything together and construct a graph of data flow and usage flow and so on. So, and that's the platform that we've built. So when agents are looking for churn, you can think about it like I'm using Claude. Hey, what was the customer churn rate in the past quarter? I'm building an
analysis. There's a chat like element that I can just ask.
So you ask Claude. I'm not your agent. I mean, you can use Claude, you can use Glean, you can use Cursor. I mean, whatever. So Claude connects to Uno via MCP to retrieve context. Hey, I want to find the customer churn. And then Uno is able to run this query on the entire graph and filter for things that are certified, that are healthy, that are used, that belong to this domain. I mean, we understand all those clues that say, hey,
this is the narrative.
That's how you calculate.
You're adding the context layer on top of the data.
Yes,
to make
so we build the context. So we're a context platform.
So you're not an AI platform. You are a context platform.
We're an AI context platform. I mean, it's built for AI.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also using a lot of AI to be generated. I mean, you need to read so much code and understand and stitch things together and things contradict. I mean, there is a lot of AI embedded in the system. And also we offer an agent like that you can talk to. Hey, I see that the churn in this report is like going up and in this report it's going down. Where's the discrepancy coming from? I mean, you don't need to go and dig and search the tables and read the code and figure it out.
So it also raises the questions from the data for the people to understand.
It's able to answer these questions like, hey, because I mean, I went like 10 steps upstream and I figured that there is a filter missing here and you included the filter in the other report and that's why it's going up here and down here. So our agent just give you these answers. So,
and the question does, if the agent came to, I don't know, some sort of a problem that it doesn't show where to associate a specific data set or something like that, if there is also a feedback loop back to the... Okay.
We've just built this exploratory mode.
Oh!
Yeah. Okay, great. Oh, amazing.
That it tells you, hey, I found 4 different tables. I can't tell the difference. Which one is the one that you often use?
I like the honesty of the...
No,
but really, because you mentioned that before... AI models have this thing, they want to please so bad.
Yes.
So they're like just inventing stuff, stuff up.
We needed to design, I mean, it's not easy to offer an exploratory mode that gives you different options and tells you I'm not sure. I mean, it was hard
to train AI to do this.
The agent to do that. But we have this. And then you say, hey, it's this table. We always query this table. So the brain in the back says, okay, so here's a rule. When they have questions, they have like a table that reads from a table that reads from a table. They always want the
that answer.
Yeah, that the last one at the end. Like
so we encode this rule. And now this becomes a rule that holds for every other question. So instead of kind of cleaning the data, selecting manually tables, from these interactions, we capture the rules and we encode them. And then it's much easier to scale.
No, it makes sense because I think at the end of the day, if it's 100% AI on top of the data with no feedback loop, I guess you are missing something.
Yes, you have
And in
to.
Many cases, it will be too flat
yeah.
and not deep enough. So that's cool. Super cool.
So do you have any like pushbacks from enterprises that are, it sounds really weird to ask that actually, but like are still afraid of AI?
Yeah, for sure.
For like to implement AI agent or AI tool within their data?
I'll tell you what they have. I mean, what's the dynamic? Like the business organization adopted AI for customer success or for, you know, doc.
Like chatbots.
Like chatbots. And also yeah, they have, you know, they approved, the corporate approved, chose Claude for their business users, right? And they use AI and they're so happy. And then they go to the data team and say, hey, I want to connect my Claude to Snowflake. Why can't I get answers from Snowflake? And the data team is like, no, no chance.
Nobody touches the data.
Nobody touches the data. It's too risky. It's too dangerous. But it's not just because, you know, they have zero visibility and understanding of what exists in the data. Zero governance. There is no system that gives them, you know, that's the map of what you have. These are the people who are using it. This is what was created by whom. They don't have that. They don't even have this layer of visibility. So they're saying, hey, we're going to connect these agents. God knows where they'll get, right? What kind of data? So companies like us, companies like cybersecurity companies like, it's called DSPM, like Sierra, we map the data. We create like the basic of the platform is to create this visibility. Now, they're used to doing so much manual work. When they come and they tell them we want to connect Claude, what they have in mind, oh my God, we're 30 people will need to work for this agent and clean stuff and refactor stuff and migrate stuff. And it's impossible. So they're saying, no, it's too messy. We need at least 18 months to refactor everything and modernize our platform. And that's where it stands.
To get it AI ready?
To get it AI ready, exactly. Like this buzz, like let's become AI ready. 18 months and huge budgets and everything's stuck. So, and that's the state. By the way, I didn't find a single enterprise that was able to deploy AI for enterprise data. It's not like it's like 10% succeed. No one succeeded.
So every organization that kind of tells you like, yeah, we need 18 months to be prepared to AI.
I tell them, okay, let's do it in three weeks. That's my, like, let's do it in 3 weeks.
Damn.
Now,
that's a
poor
proposition. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because it's already there, right? You're going to clean and work for it and kind of label things manually for real. Are you going to put, like, people to do that for the agent? What was the whole point of
having an agent if the people are doing the work for the agent?
Yeah.
Yeah, but
I love it. I just need to write everything down before it starts.
Yeah. and you know how they're running POCs right now? They're like, they select 20 tables manually. They build 100 metrics manually about those tables and they collect an agent and it's working. It's able to give good answers. Like,
But
it just doesn't scale. So I'm meeting the enterprises when they have like some experience with AI, they saw the magic when it's working and they've no idea how to scale it. And they're under the impression, and this is why the panic, and that they need to like rebuild everything. Otherwise it's never going to work with this mess. And I think our really like the innovative part of the product is that we were able to do a lot automatically, like mapping and understanding and stitching and like a lot of this process is today heavily manual and static. Like people ingest sets of tables and sets of glossaries into a catalog.
That's crazy.
Data catalogs, that's what it is, like Collibra, Alation. I don't know if you heard
it's like
the
being
names.
A librarian, something like that.
That's like the
yeah, it's being a modern librarian.
Exactly.
Oh
I call
God.
It it's a system of records that just sits there and people are responsible for maintaining it. I spoke with a big bank, I'm not going to say the name. They use one of those. The lineage is the flow of the data, okay? How this, like, I have a column, how this column got to this number in a report, the entire flow, that's called lineage. They update the lineage of the data of the bank once a year, because it takes 2 months and it's completely manual. So
that's
think
crazy.
About it, like once a year, who can connect AI to that? Like things change at the pace of AI today. I mean, if you don't map things at the speed they change, you have no chance.
You're staying behind.
Yes.
Well, it's a bank.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, there are some modern banks that try to kind of introduce innovation and become...
Look, I agree, but I don't think that the banking industry is leading innovation. You know, there are always stars, but in most cases it's
not
really...
leading innovation whatsoever, but they have lots of money.
Yes,
so from a business perspective, being able to, you know, help banks can be a big thing.
I find it kind of like funny what you just told us, because... In some ways, you know, if you're connected to Outlook, Confluence, Okta, Opera, all kinds of tools and platforms, they all like bite into your data at some point. Like they all have access to your data. So I feel like that one agent that can help you with context, that can kind of save you a lot of time, that also have access to your data, just like any other tool. But if it's AI, they're like, no, the magical AI shall not pass.
So it's not, I mean, the problem that I'm describing was the same problem like 5 years ago with people. Like anyone that worked in a big organization knows this story, that you sit in the CEO room in a meeting and you want to make decisions, and the sales team come with performance with numbers, and the product team comes with different numbers, and the marketing comes with different numbers, and the CEO goes like, how come I have like three different figures for the revenues? Like how much revenues did we, I mean, make? And no one knows.
Yeah,
and
that's then the CFO. He knows.
Right? And the CFO. Like, yeah, exactly. No, and it's like this story is not new. It's been the story of data since ever.
Since ever, yeah.
But with people, there was always this analyst that, you know, the CEO really likes. And when he really needs to do something, just build me a spreadsheet. I only trust you. And this guy, you can never fire him, by the way. The only one that knows, you know, what's really...
The wizard of
like
of
we can, you can think about it as like tribal knowledge that was there, right? And people would like train those people. Yeah. And it was slow, but everything was a bit slow. So for a number, you would wait like 3 weeks for someone to build an analysis. Now, AI changes everything, because if I'm asking what's the revenue, I'm expecting to know it now. That's the expectation.
Yeah.
No one, I mean, it doesn't make sense that I will need to ask someone to work 3 weeks
to
get an answer, right? It doesn't make sense.
That's
the gap. Like the executives are saying, hey, we are the AI era. Like what? They forgot that like 2 years ago, they couldn't get any number right. But like they want it right and now and instantly. And for companies like us, like 5 years ago, we could also introduce like governance solutions, visibility solutions, which was always like a nice to have thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we have our people. No one cares about them, by the way, analysts. I mean, I will bring more analysts. I mean, they're not expensive. But with AI, it cannot be solved by analysts. And suddenly there's budget there. And for us, it's an opportunity. I mean, it used to be a like best thing, I mean, best effort thing, not too urgent, not too important. Yes, of course, there's value. Suddenly it's like top priority, urgency. And we're also part of the execution path, which is also a big change. Think about it before that, like analysts would go to those catalogs, search for tables, search for data, build reports. It was like supportive stuff. An agent that acts on data, like changes a threshold or sends an email or makes a decision, that's not execution, needs context for execution. So context is becoming part of the execution chain, not part of the supportive chain.
Yeah.
So the value goes up.
And interesting.
That's why this layer with the transition to AI is capturing more and more value. And historically, it was a layer of, you know, catalogs value, libraries.
What's the craziest thing that, like, an enterprise or an organization, like, asked you guys to do and you were like, okay, this is way off of what we're doing. Like, what's the most crazy request that you guys had?
I mean, you get weird requests that are because they don't understand
the product.
No, they don't understand AI.
Ah, okay.
Much. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, they say, hey, they have, one of the biggest problems is that you have tons of duplicates, right? You have like 30 different definitions of churn everywhere. So if I know I'm looking for churn and all the duplicates of churn, that's easy. I can do that. I can find you all the duplicates and then I can feed you with like, this is used, this is not used, this was like built 5 years ago, ignore it, and so on. But they're expecting to create all the equivalence groups possible automatically. It's almost an NP complete problem. Like find me all the definitions and all the groups that overlap in the entire thing. Now, how come you cannot do this with AI? Now you can, but you know, it's going to be expensive like hell. So things like that, it's like they get crazy. Like you don't have like the minimum, like the basic minimum and you
take. And then you want a world.
Yeah, and then you want like things that are insane. So yeah, we get things like that and then we need to explain to them like it doesn't, what will you do with that? I mean, let's say you have like a list of like 20,000 things and they're overlaps. Are you going to go over those 20,000 things and what and clean them? Like, so yeah, we get requests like that.
I think that it's also the pricing of AI. It's something that is not clear to it. By the way, it's not clear. Like how they calculate tokens and things like that, that's completely not clear. But in general, everyone thinks that no matter which type of problem you throw at AI, you know, it should give you an answer within 2 to 5 minutes top. Yeah. And it should cost you between, I don't know, 20 cents to a buck, which is not the case at all. Because if you have a complex problem that you want AI to solve, it can take a few hours, even a few days.
And
it's
it
really
can cost you a lot.
Cost a lot.
Lot. I think that people do not understand the costing of AI tools. And also, for instance, I jiggle around video and, you know, content creation with AI. And I think that like the work that you do on AI is just regenerate and, you know, perfect, like make the prompt even better and make the context and like what you give them and the reference, everything a little bit better, but it's a process and you need to try over and over and over and more tokens and more money. And people, I think they think that you just like give a prompt, like, make me a video of an elephant riding a person, and they just think it's like boom, it happens, and you have a video for social media. But it doesn't work like that. It's a different, in my opinion, it became a different type of art. Like you have a person that used to do like, I would say, 3D modeling and After Effects and motion and whatever. You have those, and now you have AI creators that, in my opinion, they're putting the same amount of work when it comes to hours, when it comes to the, you know, learning the prompts.
Especially if you talk about video and content creation, I think the problem is, well, not the problem. I think that if you really want to fine tune it to give AI your voice, it's something that it won't take one or two or three attempts. I agree with you 100%. You need to spend hours on the computers to get it to where you want it to be. Anything else, again, AI in most cases can give you great answers if you just want to, I don't know, rewrite an email or something like that. But in
or
many
ask
cases,
who would win.
Yeah, but in most cases, it would be a bit flat. And if you want to put some soul into it, then
the soul is in humans. I always...
But you can put it. If you put the hours with the AI on the prompt, you can get it to have your...
Yeah, and then it does boost your productivity.
Yeah.
So you can do more things, but it's not really a prompt and a result. It's like you really need to be able to use it and to
understand it like anything else, like a person using Photoshop or someone editing 100%. A video. You need to have somewhat of a knowledge.
It's the same with coding, by the way. Like, okay, vibe coding. Everyone's vibe coding, right? Everyone's doing it. Like my boy just built an application, not even with
Cloud Code. Yeah, he sold it for 20 mil and he just vibe coding.
And everyone's vibe coding, right? But Okay, you can get to a certain level of, you know...
Of a demo,
of a POC that works, but now you need to build a platform that serves an enterprise with, you know, it needs to be stable 99.8% of the time. It needs to, you know, go through penetration tests. It needs to be safe. It needs to be... These are not problems that vibe coding solves.
No. 100%.
In the end, you need architects and team leaders that manage agents. But you need the brain of the architect and the team leader. Like I'm saying, like I'm not hiring developers anymore. I'm hiring team leader type of developers now. It's slightly different, the persona, like you said, like the persona changed.
Yeah.
But it's not like you get rid of people.
No, I think it's now back to the times of the engineers, because I think this is what engineers do, that they build stuff, so they know how to orchestrate everything all together. So it's moving back from developers to engineers, which I think is cool.
That's why it's called software engineering and not software development, right?
Correct.
Like there was a reason why it came.
Yeah.
100%, 100%. And I think that's by the way, it's great because I think there's also a place within the AI ecosystem for older people, because older people come from engineering in most cases and not from development.
It's like having like this whole 360 of like coming back to engineering era.
I'm talking with my dad. My dad is over 70s. He
comes in tech for many years.
Yeah, defense tech, if we can call it, military and things like that. But and I'm telling it to him all the time, the advantage that you have over developers that I meet all the time, it's huge, because you know how to build stuff, because
this is
what
you do. Yeah. And by the way, it's very similar from domain to domain. Like a system is like has its characteristics. I came for many years in the army as well, and you know, it seems like while I was doing other things, now it's the same thing. Like if you know how to build a system, how to engineer a system, you have a piece of knowledge that, by the way, that AI currently doesn't. I mean, you can give it the answers, you can get, like, you can feed it with
structure
and with structure, but like there is still a field of proper engineering, of good engineering, that is critical today, and whoever doesn't take it seriously ends up with really, you know, something that works for the demo. You can close a deal, even you can even on paper make lots of money and raise funds from the smart VCs, but then, you know, you need to execute, and execution,
that's the problem.
Becomes, you know, you can fake
100%.
Much more with AI. You can go further away with the faking till you make it thing, but then execution comes and you need to execute.
You'll get a fine product with AI. You won't get it now, I guess.
Yeah.
Now a great product with AI, because, you know, it is
good because you can visualize a product when you know, you don't have to tell someone about the product. You'd be like, hey, this is the demo I've built, this is how it's supposed to look, this is the features, this is like, these are the things, you know, the components that make that recipe.
That's huge, by the way.
Yeah,
like so many startups needed to build things to show them, like you can show,
amazing.
Like ideation, validation, product market fit became something that runs
much
so fast
easier.
That's amazing. But then you're actually
getting
to
the POC.
Yeah,
is
then
easy,
you get like the money, and you need to you need to work at it and not just vibe coding on your laptop. At home.
Obviously, I mean, I'm going to, you know, I'm working with enterprises, so I need to go through security vetting, vendor vetting, I'm going to touch their metadata. And from a regulation or, you know, a compliance perspective, AI is new and it's running very fast. So in order to even start deploying your product, you need to commit to many, many, many things you're not going to do. You're not going to train on the metadata. You're not going to collect it. You're not going to learn. You know, I'm like, okay, but what's the point? But that's the whole idea. Like, I'm offering you AI, no feedback, no, and like, So
why are we here?
Regulation and compliance is always lagging, like on a state level, governance level, I mean government level, but also on an
regulatory is always behind tech.
Like the 100%. CISO keeps its power and everything slows down. So like there is always this part as well. How is regulation catching up with that?
And is it getting better now? Like, there should be an AI company that will solve that as well.
The reason,
right?
We're able to kind of navigate it now is that we're in a position that the understanding is so shallow that we can explain the companies how it's going to work and convince them and kind of, you know, determine the language a little bit. But then you go to legal teams. What do you know about AI? And they got kind of have their
checklist of what they need to see.
And you bring the champion that you're selling to, and they're like, hey, listen, the whole point I'm bringing them is for AI. How come did you put language that they're not allowed to use AI? And like, you know, so you get to this weird situation.
Yeah.
Who we would say is like in companies are, how do I call it? Like the most innovative team or department that you see when you work with, because you probably meet a lot of like people from different departments, different personas. Who you would say in general speaking is like the most innovative departments?
You know, I would want to say in the end it's R&D.
Really?
But yeah, it's not really. I mean, in big companies, I mean, you would guess marketing, you would guess product, but I think in the end you have most of the like innovation is in R&D, but it's not necessarily innovation that serves the company. Okay, like
for them,
like what R&D people like to do is like, you know, do things that excite them.
Yeah.
And they will build things that will be very cool and all kind of tools and, you know, amazing stuff. And also I've seen...
No business correlation though.
Not necessarily, yeah, exactly. Not necessarily business correlation. Like products are busy correlating what R&D people are doing with the business, right? So they're not innovating. They're like, they're the controllers of that. So I think I'm seeing a lot in R&D. And also the cool things that they do with AI to boost their productivity today. Like they have agents that run tests and agents that write specs and agents that code and agents that review and agents that report. Like they do amazing things. So I think this gave them an opportunity to innovate that in a way that is aligned with the business because it boosts productivity. And R&D teams are doing great stuff. Like I'm meeting new things every time I'm talking to an organization. Like R&D teams are doing great stuff. What they don't like to do is the complex, non-sexy part, which is to build the context. So I'm like,
so
okay, I'm bringing
place,
the non-sexy, complex part.
Hey, I am the not-sexy part.
Yeah, I'm the non-sexy part. You want to pay for it because you don't want to do it. I'm leaving all the sexy thing for you.
I'll do the hard work for you. Yeah. And then you can continue doing the sexy things that you're doing. Yes. That's cool. Look, I think that on our end, coming from the media space, I think we are seeing... You know, I'm thinking like, what is the most innovative part? I would say that in media, usually if you don't get the C-suite into it, thinking innovative, everything. It doesn't really matter if like you have an innovative product guy or editorial guy or whatever. You know, if the C-level doesn't flow with it, nothing happens. And you need to have somebody innovative or not just someone that says, okay, I trust the employees, I know what they're doing. He's a great manager. If he says that this is something we should do, we go with him. They need to really like it. They really need to fall in love with it. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially in publishing, the fear from AI is huge.
Really?
It's huge. They're feeling like, yes, because think about it. First of all, a lot of website content creators really saw a major decrease. I'm talking about tens of percents in the traffic coming for the website.
Because AI became kind of the search engine. So you don't go to Google anymore.
Yeah, everyone's searching
You have, you know, you have the Gemini answer at the beginning.
The publishing.
The publishing industry significantly. Like everyone that optimized, like all guys, SEO and PPC and all
now
that.
Now SEO is
like... SEO is like chat search.
Yeah, it's geo. They call
but then them. You see websites with tons of content. With no ability, like it's not even built for someone to browse the website. It's only built for agents to, like you're no longer expected to even go to a website and understand. I mean, I'm seeing websites with many, 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 many like articles and pages and you don't even understand it, but an agent can understand that. And it's just designed for that, which is weird, right? What about like simplicity, messaging, getting
engagement.
There,
you know? Yeah.
I think, look, that's a problem. There's also the problem, the fact that, you know, publishers today, they need to create new, fresh content for AI to be up to date with what's going on around the world on one hand, but on the other hand, AI is actually killing those media publishers by taking the traffic. Again, as we remember, publishing work with advertisers, this is the main way they are generating revenue, which, you know, less traffic, less revenue, less journalists that are writing new articles. And I think that, you know, until we'll get to this equilibrium of between AI and basically news outlet, we are in a tough position. And on top of that, there is actually a lot of sites that are designed for AI to read the news, so to speak. The only problem that
they're biased.
That's a nice way to put it. In some cases, it's actually, you know, fraudulent websites that are trying to feed the AI with as much relevant, I would say, content to the content writer. So if you have from governments like, you know, Russia or whatnot that are doing that to
yeah.
skew the AI to toward to their narrative, and that's one problem. In other case, just people that are not responsible for you know whatever they're writing, and then you know the backlash is huge because people then talk about flat earth and things like that. Although they talked about it,
yeah, they
prior
about
to that,
no.
of oh, course. Yeah, but again, flat earth is as an example, but you have a lot of fake due to that, and the AI.
Listen,
most
AI
cases
slop.
Don't know.
I think like AI slop has been such a big buzzword in the past few months because you know. You go on LinkedIn, okay? Let's be real for a second. You go on LinkedIn, and if I see one more long dash in a post, I would fucking kill some. No, I would fucking, I don't know. Like, this kind of, like, feeling that the internet is filled with AI slop that is communicating with other AI slop and bots, and... I get all kinds of LinkedIn messages from bots, and most of them are not even, like, you know, connected to what I do.
Of course. And they just react with your post, and they write comments, and, like...
Yeah, and they write, like, the most, like, weird comments. It's like, I don't know, we'll
they're
have...
They're missing context, I guess.
Yeah, they're missing... yeah, I think they're missing context. And what you said about websites being overpacked with content so they can just, you know... be readable to AI. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's the future. I mean, like, maybe now content and news media outlets will be like, okay, I just need to have the content store somewhere. And, you know...
No front end, maybe no UI. I don't know, maybe...
Yeah, maybe it's the... That's how it goes. It sounds very sad.
yeah, but also the AI interface, like, is pretty, like, you know, flat. Like, but you have, like, black text and you communicate. There should be a new level of, you know, images.
It doesn't drive engagement.
It doesn't drive engagement at the moment,
100%.
Right? Yeah. There is no call to action there that you will actually, you know, act on. So this needs to go through some sort of transformation or revolution. Like, if you interact with AI, then where's the call to action? And what am I doing with that?
That's a good question. How do you, let's say that at the end of this specific revolution, I don't know, 5, 10, 20 years from now, you will have publishers would actually be just an agent that you will interact with them, that will
and you have, like,
read
I
you
would
the
say...
news, give you the news or whatever in some sort of a way. What would be this type of interaction? Should the interaction, again, we talk a lot about it, should I... interact with an avatar of a journalist that I like, or what would it be like some sort of a chat with, I don't know,
it's Wall
Street Journal
to think,
what,
to
what
think
not,
like you have agent. Maybe like an agent of like CNN, an agent of like Fox News, an agent of whatnot, and according to your own preference, you can just talk with that agent and be like, hey, what's the news today?
Exactly. And he can read it out to you or
publishers,
you can,
we have it for you. Thank you so much.
With some
and then, and by the way, then you can also, you need to go to those publishers and look at all of their archive and create context, relevant context. So the agent
is able to give the right thing, the most relevant things.
Do you have any, you know, people from publishing that like reached out to, you know, or wanted to implement AI within their structure?
I mean, we're not yet operating there, so I don't have good answers. And we're still early stage, relatively.
That's
but
interesting.
No, we didn't speak with publishers, actually. I mean, I'm thinking out loud because I do have some folks from the CNN on my, like, you know, pipeline. So maybe we'll get there. But I don't have something very smart to share about it at the moment.
A big insight. But it's interesting if publishers would have this element of context regarding, I don't know, past articles or... things that have changed. For instance, when I worked in publishing, I remember there was this one instance, someone wrote an article about someone who did something cool, but apparently someone wrote the kind of like the same article last year and they just didn't really check it. So they tried to check in the archives if the name of the person appears, they couldn't find it. And then someone were like, after the story came out, they were like, hey, cool story. But just so you know, you guys posted like kind of the same story a year ago. and we had to be like, oh, it's for SEO. It's for SEO. But it was a big...
That's a good excuse, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, but it was a, like, it was an embarrassing moment. Yeah, that you, sure. Like, you can't even find in your own archive your own articles.
That's the problem I said before. Like, people could never really navigate their own data. That was the problem. So at least it helps. Like, agents would find it.
Yeah.
For sure.
We'll find it. They will find the context. I'm just thinking about, like, in you know, when you have a discussion and, you know, people are using and comments are being thrown out in the air, and an agent that can really create some sort of a timeline of what's relevant in which argument, things like that. I think that can be really helpful, especially right now, getting the facts right, which is a huge problem that
Ron
we have.
Ron really loves facts.
I love facts.
He loves truth.
I love, yeah.
Think about patents.
In what?
Like patents, like patent office, like a whole
oh,
industry.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh my God, yeah.
That lived on people that searched,
yeah,
and
yeah,
found so things that might be similar, all right, or already existing patents, like AI, like go home, all yeah. of you, like
100%.
All of those, you know, bureaucratic people that would give you like pages and pages of answers that you need to write responses to. Like, you write the response with the agent, you generate it with the agent, everything. It's completely replaced by AI. Completely, like,
yeah.
An entire industry that made so much money. And
which, by the way, amazing, and I think it's about time, because, you know,
yeah.
if there is no real value and AI can get in there, I'm 100%.
That's really cool. Like, wherever there wasn't real value, AI comes and like
gives
pulls
you.
It, yeah. And then exposes it, and it's amazing.
No, I think that what, again, and I think, you know, it's looking at it at a different angle, but I think that what you're doing in AI, and I think what a lot of other companies are doing in AI, is creating some sort of a bridging the gap, basically. Like, okay, there is an amazing tool that you can use. In some cases, you know how to use it. In some cases, you don't. And we will create some sort of platform, some sort of a bridge for you to gap either the misknowledge or just, you know, make life easier for you.
Yeah.
Because, again, people think AI is magic. It's not magic.
But it can make your life easier if you know how to use it. Or
100%. Yeah, sure. But no matter how good you are with dealing with AI, there are so many different types of way you can leverage AI, and you can't master all of them. So in some cases, you need companies that will come and will give you the interface.
Yeah,
they will master it for you. Yeah, exactly. And that will always be the case. By the way, the same thing that is going on with internet and coding in general is just an evolvement. It's another way for us to be super productive, which is amazing, much, much more than anything that came before us. But at the end of the day, there is work to be done. There will always be work to be done.
And I think there's another angle to that, and brings me back to the first question, which is an answer we gave to one of those VCs. Let's say, I mean, maybe the models will become like, I mean, extreme models. They will be able to solve like things. They can connect to the data. They can understand it. They can browse and, you know, send emails, make actions, make decisions. But in the end, someone needs to be accountable. I mean, you will not put an agent in jail or fire an agent. Right?
Yeah.
Someone needs to be accountable.
To be the mom
You need to have like humans in the loop somewhere, defining the 100%. Guardrails, defining, right, the thresholds, the range where they can operate, the range where they cannot. And to do that, you need to give these people some visibility into what AI is doing. So there will always be room for visibility and governance and control systems, just because we're people and we're humanity. I mean,
you're humans.
And we're not, I mean, and those robots are not yet accountable for anything.
Right.
They can do whatever they want. No one will blame them.
Yeah, you can just shut them off and that's it.
Yeah, so.
That must say, scary position to be accountable for AI. That's
definitely,
you need to know your shit
maybe
to sit in that room.
That's what the data teams that are, like the data platform team, this is why they're so scared. Because the executive suite wants them to be accountable for AI, for trusted AI. They want AI that works and gives them trusted results. And like, who wants to be accountable for that? So they're just freezing.
The only thing that is always making me laugh about it, that they are accountable for people that make a lot of mistakes all the time, and they are scared of
agents.
Being accountable of agents.
Yeah.
Which is, it's funny, ironic.
Having said that, our time has come to an end, my friends. Listen, we have been recording for 15 minutes and it felt like 20. Really? No, I have
really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah. Sarah, thank you so much. Yeah, I have so many questions and so many topics.
And I'm like, what are we going to talk about?
Yes, it felt like the beginning, I must say. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much for coming here and sharing your knowledge and your perspective on AI. I feel like it really opened up like a lot of things that we
have tons of questions.
Tons of questions, but we have to keep it for after the broadcast. So thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on LinkedIn. We post episodes each month, maybe 2 episodes in a month. I don't know if I feel like it. Sarah, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Ron, for
being the best guest.
The sidekick.
I'm
the sidekick, yeah.
The best sidekick a girl can ask.
Thank you. I'll work maybe on some toupee next time to have it maybe more. Like, I don't know, like...
What's the
name of the clown that was with Krusty the Clown?
Sideshow Bob.
Sideshow Bob. Yeah, he had like the whole...
Cool.
Yeah,
let's talk about it.
Let's talk. Okay.
Sounds good.
You disagree. I understand.
Bye.